Hello, everyone. This is Andrea Von Kampen, and welcome to my podcast, It's My Party. This is a podcast where I sit down with women who I find to be interesting and creative, and we have meaningful conversations. So, if that sounds good to you, let's get started. Today on the podcast, we have Jane Bruce. I met Jane this past fall at a gig in New York, and we immediately hit it off. In today's podcast, Jane and I talk about her upbringing, what it was like to study musical theater at the University of Michigan, her move to NYC and starting to get work in New York City, her road to Broadway and what it was like to work on Broadway, and finally her new album, My Bed, which came out February 11th, 2022. Jane is inspiring and down to earth, and I think you're going to love this podcast. So without further ado, Jane Bruce.
At this point, I'm like trying to get my life to the point where I only do creative things and everyone does everything else for me.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that is the actual full dream.
It is. I mean, I'm not there at all. I think I'm sort of exploiting family members to try and get there, so.
Oh my gosh. No, I've just fully, especially like embarking on the music journey, I've fully had to accept that I'm the type that's going to have to pay for everything. I'm going to have to just have a lot of buckets of money.
Yeah,
have everyone do all the things because I can't figure it out. I can't do it. No way.
That is exactly where I am. I'm good at like one thing and everything else I have to just pay for.
But you're really damn good at it too. So it's going to be okay.
That's so funny. Well, okay. Thank you for being on my podcast. It's the first season of my podcast. Of course. I am interviewing creative women who I think are really cool and thought about you, and I thought this will be so fun. Did you have a show last night?
I did. We did it like a Jagged reunion concert because we got, you know, closed so suddenly. So
yeah,
it was a totally just like cast put together thing, and it was definitely a whirlwind of a week, like just getting there. You know, even though we all knew a lot of the material, we were like rearranging some things and doing some different things, and I played a song on my own, and it was really great.
That sounds incredible. So how long ago did you guys get shut down? It's been pretty recent, right?
Yeah, we closed. We found out we were closing the Monday before Christmas.
Oh my gosh.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, everyone. It's over. That's insane. So what have you been doing from then till now?
Mostly sitting on the couch, which I was not too mad about. I think I'm really good at doing nothing. So I've been very successful, I would say, in the past month.
Are you also a bit of a homebody? Like, do you sort of love being home?
I love being home more. I feel like the pandemic made me more of a homebody. I think I'm the type that I will say yes to everything. You know, if someone asks me, I think before the pandemic, I would have days where I would leave my apartment with like four bags at 10 a.m. and not be home till 11 at night and just be running around. And I love that. And I love like the energy that the city allows for that kind of doingness, you know? But I think in the pandemic, being home made me appreciate it differently. And now that I live with Elia and we have such a wonderful spot and we have a cat, and now I really sort of cherish those moments. And I'm lucky, I'm spoiled because he works from home anyway, even if it weren't a pandemic. So
that's so great.
Just go knock on his
next
little door.
Next time I play New York, I definitely want to see your guys' place. I mean, I've only heard great things about it.
Yeah, well, it's not that glamorous, but it's just a cozy, cutie spot. And we have a very cute cat, so.
That's so great. All right, so yeah, I want to talk about Jagged Little Pill, but I sort of want to take it back further. Pre-New York days, like, when did you know, like, did you always want to be on Broadway? Did you always want to be a performer? Have you just known that from a young age?
Yeah, I think definitely pretty young, I realized. Definitely elementary school. I must have been some school play or something, and I was a little bit of an outcast, a little bit of an outsider. It was like weird growing up in Utah and not being Mormon. Mm. And I know so many lovely Mormon folks. It's not that like Mormons are evil, you know, not at all. It's just like any situation where the you know, majority of people are one thing and you're not that, it's going to make it weird and hard, especially as a kid, and kids are awkward and sometimes a little mean, you know? And so I think when I found out that I could sing and perform and that everyone was like, wow, great. You know, I was like, oh, well, I'm doing this. You like me now? You clapped for
She's
me?
Not Mormon, but she can sing.
Yeah. And I just loved it. You know, I think as I've gotten older, I've been really trying to dissect, or maybe not dissect is the right word, but like I've really been trying to examine my creativity. And especially in times like this where you don't have projects, you don't have things going on, like going back to that feeling of being a kid and discovering that you love something so much and like figuring out how to be sustained by that curiosity and that like the kind of quest for artistry instead mm-hmm. of like the result of your artistry.
Yeah.
Because I loved being a kid and doing it and like working on shows and starting to play guitar, starting to write songs and just like I had so much confidence because I knew I loved it so much. And that was mm-hmm. enough, you know?
Yeah. Oh man, that is like such a great way to think about it, taking it back kind of like at its purest form, like before it became like capitalized upon or people tried to make money from it. Like it was just, you just did it because you loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I definitely knew pretty early and I was really lucky that my parents were so supportive and they drove me to all my play rehearsals and things. And I was like, I don't want to stay in Utah. And they were like, great, go. Well, my parents are from Nebraska. My parents are from Lincoln.
Amazing.
And just sort of ended up in Utah a little bit randomly, I would say. Like, we don't have any family there or anything. So,
okay.
So they weren't like, what do you mean you want to leave Utah? They were like, yeah, go.
So where did you go after Utah?
I went to college at the University of Michigan. Mm-hmm. I got really lucky and got into their musical theater program, which is like one of the best in the country.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, they are the ones who created the Harry Potter musical, which is that not sort of the biggest artistic contribution in the last century that they've put out?
Truly.
And were you a part of that, Jane?
No, but let me tell you, when I was, I don't know if it was when I was auditioning or when I was going back to like look at the program with my mom, but it was mm-hmm. while they were doing it. And I remember being in the theater building and there was like this enormous line stretching down the hallway to get in. And I was like, what's this for? And they were like, it's a Harry Potter musical. And I was like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, should we go? And my mom was like, oh, the line's so long. And then, and then later I found out it was this huge sensation. I ended up knowing some of the people who helped create it. Like I crossed over still with AJ Holmes and like several of the people that were in it and then became friends with Darren actually later.
Okay.
But
that's amazing.
They're all just great people. I regret not going in.
I mean, absolutely. This probably is the biggest regret.
Yeah. I'm going to say that next time someone says, what's your biggest regret? Now I have a good answer. I always forget about my own life when people ask questions like that, you know?
Man, I'm a little starstruck right now, to be honest, that you could have gotten in that line. Okay, so did you enjoy U of M? Was it a good community for you?
I loved it. I absolutely loved school. I love learning, though. Like, I love class. That's another thing I've been doing since everything paused. I've been, like, getting back in acting classes. And
that's so fun.
Of course, they're on, like, Zoom at the moment. But I loved school. I absolutely loved it. I loved my classmates. I loved my teachers. I loved the environment. I loved being in Ann Arbor. I loved all the other opportunities. I loved going to see shows at the Arc and like, getting to experience other things about just like being in college. Like I joined the ballroom dancing team for like a semester and I didn't stay on it, but I was able to join it. You know, there were all sorts of things.
That's so cool. This sounds like an incredible experience. I'm from Ann Arbor originally. But then we moved to Nebraska when I was 4, but I've gone back and played shows in the area and it's always like a very intense, like study crowd. I feel like I have not been with like the artsy people of the university. I'm always like playing a coffee shop where everyone's like studying to be a surgeon and everyone's like really annoyed that a musician's there. I mean, this was years ago now, but I just got like such a studious vibe from U of M. So this is cool to hear that you were able to do all these amazing artistic things.
Well, next time you go, I'll give you the lowdown. I'll put you in touch with the theater students and be like, you have to have a house party this weekend. You have to invite my friend. Then you'll get the real.
I'd like to go to the ballroom dance class. So see if you can get that going for me as well.
Okay, I'll investigate.
Let him know I did do one semester of tap in college. So I have a little experience.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways.
Tap is basically music, you know, with your
I agree. Yeah. So, okay, you graduate from U of M with a degree in theater, musical theater. Okay, yep. Cool. Yep. And then where do you go from there?
I went right to New York. The program is really great in the sense that it really kind of sets you up to join the industry at large. So you do like a showcase in New York that they invite all these agents and directors and all these people to. And I think some people, like one of my best friends, ended up going to LA instead of New York. I think some years folks go to Chicago. Sometimes people, you know, don't end up going right to a city where mm-hmm. there's kind of a showbiz industry happening. Mm-hmm. But I would say most people do. And just right away. And I think that was the first time where things didn't quite go as I had planned, you know?
Okay. And was the main goal when going to New York to get on Broadway? Or was it just like find any work in the acting, singing, musical theater sphere?
That's such a good question. Definitely, I think Broadway was the goal. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, everything, it seems so like rosy and like, wow, you know, the dream. Mm-hmm. Wow, the mm-hmm. fancy job. And I think, but when I was in school, I did a lot of the kind of like weirder, grungier productions. And like, I took a lot of extra acting classes. Like, I was also really interested in doing things that were maybe not super commercial, but more like slightly off the beaten path. I started writing and performing my own music a lot more in college as well, which is when I started, I don't know, I've never been shy about sharing my music. Like, I feel like mm-hmm. even I should have been at times. I don't think all my songs were great back in the day, but you know, I feel very much as an artist and as a person, I like being someone who can be like, yeah, you want to hear that story? I'll tell you, like, I'll wear it on my sleeve, you know?
Absolutely.
And which again, I should maybe take more time to reflect before I just like jump in. But you know, you live, you learn.
Absolutely. So you said that this was the first time things didn't go to plan. What do you mean by that?
I think I thought that I was like really hot shit. You know, I was like, oh, they're gonna
really.
And Jane,
you were.
I was like, they're really gonna need me. They don't even know it, but oh. And I think I just like didn't fit in people's idea of what a young woman should be I don't know, like it was the first time that I feel like not having a type that was really easy to pinpoint at the time, like was an issue in a way that I was really confused about. I was like, I'm an actor. I can do anything. Like,
yeah.
I struggled a lot with eating disorders in college and like my weight fluctuated so much in that time. And which is another unfortunate thing of being a woman and being a performer and being, you know,
watched
and, yeah. and put in certain boxes based on not only your abilities, but how you look and how you read to people. Mm-hmm. And so I'd gone on a bit of a roller coaster with it over the years. And by the time I graduated college, I was healthier in my mind, mm-hmm. and a little heavier and had like really short hair, and which was awesome. And I looked great with my little pixie haircut, but I think it resulted in like lots of weird auditions for like to understudy moms who were like in their 40s. And like, I don't know, it was
That'd
really
be so weird to come out of college and have that be what they're pegging you as.
Yeah, it was very odd. And the small mindedness, right? It was all like moms and lesbians. And I was like, yeah. Okay, all right. Like, but really, like that's, so this mm-hmm. is what you all think is, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just interesting.
So fascinating.
And yeah. Oh, yeah.
So what do you do from there then? Like, so you get there and it's not what you thought. I mean, I'm guessing it was really hard. Like, I have other friends who live in New York, and it's what I hear is that it's very hard. It's not like any of the rom-coms we watch on Netflix. Oh,
if only. Yeah, it's wild. I mean, I moved into a sublet with one of my good friends from Michigan who had this really cool theater company. And we subletted an apartment that we thought was like in Upper Manhattan, but was fully in the Bronx.
Oh no!
So like, if you think of Times Square as like 42nd Street, mm-hmm. we were on 225th Street.
Oh my gosh!
Which you're like, oh, but the subway, it's so close. It was not that close. It was not that close.
Hours.
Yeah, it was not ideal. And of course, then I got a restaurant job that was in Soho, which is like, you know, another 50 streets down. So it was. It was a journey, you know. Mm-hmm. The apartment was gorgeous. I think I'll never live in an apartment so beautiful again. But I also don't really think I want to live in the Bronx again necessarily. So yeah, it was a wild time. I did get a job. My first job was doing the national tour of Elf, the musical.
Okay.
And it was, I played the mom. I played like a character who had a 12-year-old, even though I was 22.
Child bride.
Yeah. Don't do the math on that one. And it was a non-equity production. So there's, with the Actors Union, there's certain productions where, you know, you have to be in the union for the productions to happen.
And were and then you in other- the union at this point or not yet?
I was not yet in the union. Okay. And so the funny thing about like the theater industry in New York is like you'll have these shows that go on Broadway and then they'll do a national tour of that show for a couple years with union actors. So everyone gets paid really well. Everyone's protected. It's like the same production from Broadway and it goes on the road. But then sometimes the producers decide like, let's save a little more money. And they'll make the production non-equity, which means that all the actors are non-union and don't have to be paid as much.
Wow.
But then it's otherwise the exact same production from Broadway. Mm-hmm. You just have 22-year-olds playing
40-year-olds. You're just saving money.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And so I did that and it was great. It was awesome to tour. It was great to like have that experience.
How long did you do that for?
Because it was a holiday show, it was only like November to early January. So it was really quick. Mm-hmm. Felt, you know, felt long when you're like getting on a bus every night. Well, you've toured, I'm sure you know. It's like, yeah, oh my gosh.
I mean, like anything other than a weekend is like interminable for me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man. So that's your first gig. It lasts a couple months. That's great. Where do you go from there then? What's next?
Then I came back to the city and, you know, back to the restaurant job and like back to the hustle. And I ended up getting offered and booking a couple other jobs on tours like that that were non-union to like play or understudy roles that were a little beyond my natural age. And I turned those down because I just didn't want to like get stuck in a loop of doing something that I knew was not, you know, it's like dream job adjacent. You know what I mean? Like
totally.
And I did want to work towards joining the union and it was a lot more prohibitive to join the union at the time. They've since changed the requirements, so it's a lot more accessible, which I think is great.
That's really good. How at that point, like, what did you have to do to join the union? I've always been so fascinated by this.
I think at the time, you either joined a show where they like the way that the contracts were with the theater were such that you would get your equity card by being in the company, or like if you join a Broadway show or a Broadway tour, you automatically get your card. So that's the easiest way. Or they had a point system where if you worked, you'd get a point for every week worked, I believe, at a theater that had union affiliation or maybe had a few people in the company who were union.
Okay.
And so then you were like joining, you were working, gathering your points. And I want to say at the time it was 50 points or like 50 weeks of work.
Wow.
Doing like regional theater or, but the thing also about these non-equity tours, you don't get any points. So you're, it doesn't count towards, anyway, it's a very interesting system.
I mean, it definitely seems like we don't hire non-equity. You only get equity if you get a job, but we won't hire you if you're not equity. Like it's a terrible catch-22.
It is. And the people are just as talented, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who end up doing a lot of non-equity tours because it's really, then you're in that pool and you, it's really consistent work and it still pays really well. Like you can still certainly, you know, save and, and you get a per diem every week and everything. So it's more just that like, it's such a shame that it doesn't go towards then joining the union. If, you know.
Yeah. And that's really weird. Okay. So keep going. Christmas, then you've turned down some things. Then what?
Gosh, that, then those years were just a real, I don't know. It just felt like it was just a crunchy time, you know? Mm-hmm. I did a lot of out-of-town shows that were like new musicals that were being workshopped out of town.
That's cool.
I did this really wild immersive show that was like sort of a folk rock musical in terms of what the score was. And they created a role for me so that I could like be in the band, but also sort of be a character.
Ooh.
So while I was like running around this like weird loft in Brooklyn, like with my guitar, like, going in between people, like, excuse me, oh, excuse me, gotta get over there to sing a song, sorry. Oh, hey, you know.
This sounds like my eighth grade Christmas production.
Oh, gosh. It was very cool. It was called The Bad Years, but it was also so insane because the premise of the show, like, it's not like Sleep No More where it's like, it's Macbeth and it's a little spooky and like follow people or don't, you know, and you know who's the actors, you know who's not. This was like the setting was a house party. So everyone showed up and got wasted. And you were like, yeah, cool, fun. But then you were also like, oh, I got to do this choreography over here. Excuse me, sir, who's maybe about to puke or like, that's no, wild. Sorry, you can't actually kiss me, you know. It was wild. So I did a lot of things that were sort of like that, that I really actually loved. And I loved the experience of like going somewhere and living somewhere new for a few months and being with a new group of people and like working on something new. And I feel like as a writer, those times were always really productive for me. Mm. There's something about like being in a new environment that I always felt more, I don't know, creatively inspired by, or just getting out of whatever weird sublet I had in the city. I lived in like every borough and every neighborhood and generally moved every like 3 months or so.
Oh, wow.
Never had furniture for a long time, you know?
Oh my gosh, this is brutal.
It's so weird. The first time I finally signed a lease where I was going to live somewhere for a year, I then immediately got a job out of town and then went out of town to do the job. And while I was out of town, my subletter told me that the apartment had bed bugs and all my stuff had bed bugs.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I couldn't go back.
Oh, that's so awful.
I know. And I couldn't go back to figure it out because I was away and I couldn't.
Because you're gone.
You know? And my roommate put all my stuff in garbage bags and put all my stuff on the roof of the building.
Well, that's nice of them.
Yeah, which was an interesting, which was a curious choice. And so then I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna get out of here. And so,
wow. Anyway. Will you tell me? I think it was you that was telling me this story about you did a TV thing, but like the time period got messed up. Was that you?
Yes. Yes.
Will you tell
that
story?
Yes. Oh gosh, this was amazing. So I think it was my like second TV job. And again, there's the same sort of hierarchy with TV work and unions. And there's the SAG union and there's a certain amount of jobs that you can take before you then have to join the union. And so there are certain productions and like shows that specifically look for those actors who are not yet in the union so that, again, you don't have to pay them quite as much. And then those are the shows that maybe the production is like at a little different level. Like it's not quite HBO, you know. And those jobs that I did were on the like Discovery ID channel, you know, these like investigative, like true crime reenactment type shows.
Love those.
And
shows.
Oh yeah. And this one was about H.H. Holmes, who had this like crazy murder castle in Chicago in the 1890s. And so I played like one of his victims who swoops in and is like with another man, but then I leave my husband to go with him and then I get pregnant and then he.
So then of course says, you deserve to die.
So then I deserve to die. Yeah. And I had a great, you know, death scene, murder scene. Very, very dramatic. And of course we were not in a castle in Chicago. We were in a mansion in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from certain
movie
angles,
magic.
Movie magic from certain angles, I could buy it, you know, I don't know. I actually don't even know that I ever watched it because I don't really like watching myself on film, but I should find it. The best part is because it was low budget, you know, they didn't have money for like wigs, right? And I had like roots. I have blonde hair and mm-hmm. the hair was not in great shape. You know, we had a little grow out. it was not a dye job from the 1890s.
Right.
You know, I was already, it was not long enough. Like we were already in a sticky spot, I would say. And the hair woman, bless her heart, she was so nice. And she thought that she had been hired for a job that was set in the 1980s.
It's so bad.
And had not done any research on the 1890s, which is really a different time. And so she would, and I, because in theater, you usually have to do your own hair and makeup. I have like a little bit of an understanding. And also I had done research on the time period, obviously, because I was like, I love to, you know, I get a job and I nerd out and, you know, do all my homework, whatever. And so we're on set and she would start doing something with my hair and I'd be like, oh, I don't know. I don't mean to interrupt.
Did
I don't know if they did that. Did they do that? And I really lost this one battle with a claw clip, you know,
They're so
in now.
Yes. So did you just do this murder mystery like in a hot pink scrunchie? I mean like, and was the clothing 1890s? So it was sort of,
yeah,
it sort of worked.
It, you know, I think,
you know what? We need to watch it. We need to watch it and then we need to evaluate.
I know there was a scene where I was supposed to be in Well, I was in a bathtub, and it was very, you know, I had like little bits covering my bits, and this little like scene. But I had this claw clip that I couldn't convince her not to do the claw clip. And so I told the director, I was like, hey, like, just, I don't know what the angle is.
I just don't think my character would have used the claw clip.
I was just like, I just want to make sure that you don't shoot the back of my head. I don't think you should shoot the back of my head for this scene. And he looked and he was like, oh, yeah.
That's too good. Oh my gosh. I love these behind the scenes stories. These are too good. So, okay. Next question. How did you get your equity card?
I got my equity card doing a production of a show called The Bridges of Madison County.
Oh, was it the musical?
It's such a beautiful score. Yeah.
I love that musical. What were you?
I understudied the Joni Mitchell song Girl. They cast, because it was a production in Arkansas, and this was obviously before a pandemic where you had to have lots of understudies for everything. But, you know, because Francesca's a little older, the woman who played, I think, what's her name? I can't remember the character's name. The one who sings Another Life. She was then also a little older so that she could understudy Francesca. So I was the state fair singer.
Okay. Come on down. Bow, 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 yes. That is such a great show. Where in Arkansas did you do that?
Little Rock.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. It was great. It was great to get my card. It was like that production's interesting because I think the family, the way it was built, I know some people who were in the original production, and I think it was one of those shows where along the way they kept like cutting and cutting and cutting these different things. And so like the ensemble ended up not being like in the show a whole lot. Okay. And I think it's really moving the ways that they are in the original production, like present to watch a lot of the stuff that happens. Mm-hmm. But in our production in Arkansas, I think our director was a little nervous about what to do with all of us. So we ended up just doing a lot of furniture pushing and singing off stage. But I got my equity card and Little Rock was fine.
Arkansas is a little hidden gem. Have you ever been to Fayetteville?
I think I did actually go to Fayetteville on that while I was there to actually see the
tour. Fayetteville is so cool.
Yeah, it was really.
It's such a cool city.
Yes, it was great.
I want everyone to love Fayetteville as much as I do. And then you have Walmart Land like 20 minutes away in Bentonville. Lots of great places. Have you read the book, Bridges of Madison County?
You know, I didn't. I didn't maybe do as much homework for that job.
Furniture pushing?
Yeah, I was like, I'm good for this one.
I will say the book is great. I was in a public library last summer, and I just sat down and I read the whole thing in one sitting, and it was a really enjoyable experience. So
I love that feeling.
I recommend.
Okay, noted.
Hello, it's my party listeners. I am taking a quick break from this week's episode to tell you all about our sponsor, Agora Art and Ceramic Studio. Agora is a small woman-run business that makes ceramics, jewelry, and paintings. I am a big fan of Agora. I currently own 2 mugs, and they are my favorite mugs. I have the cloud mug and the mug with the little village on it that I got at Christmas time. And I'm actually thinking of just getting rid of all other mugs and only buying Agora because it's all I drink out of. So if you want to do this too, if you want to start your Agora mug collection, you can go to agorastudio.art and use the code PARTY15 to receive 15% off your purchase from now through August 1st. That is agorastudio.art. Also, feel free to follow Agora on Instagram, TikTok, and sign up for the Agora mailing list at Agora Studio Art. That is AGORASTUDIO.ART. Okay, now, let's get back to the episode.
So, okay, Arkansas, you play a furniture pusher in Bridges of Madison County. Love that. And then, what is your Broadway debut?
So, I came back after that job and shortly after did another amazing musical called The Ballad of Little Joe in New Jersey. Mm. It was another new-ish musical. And the score is by Mike Reed, who wrote I Can't Make You Love Me. And so the music was extraordinary. It was like sort of a folky country.
I have to listen to this. Is there a soundtrack?
There is.
Okay.
And I sing on it.
Are you on it? Oh my my gosh. I'm on it. Okay, all right. We will actually be linking that below.
it's just a gorgeous score. I absolutely love doing that show. And I felt like because it was sort of close to the city and they had had another show that was there recently that then ended up blowing up. And so I really thought that that was going to be like finally my moment, you know? Yeah, I was like, oh, I'm originating this role. It's a great cast. Everyone has been on Broadway, or like almost everyone's been on Broadway except me. But like, I'm still like cool and playing a lead. And like, I felt great about the work I was doing. I felt so excited and compelled by all of it. And then got back to the city, and that fall, there just nothing was happening. Nothing was landing. Mm. Nothing was going. And my boyfriend at the time was feeling really antsy about being in the city and was kind of like, I don't know, maybe we should go to Chicago. Maybe we should do something else. And it was in that time actually that I wrote one of the singles I released recently called Too Late about, like, I don't know, you know, like, what am I doing? At what point do you face the career part of your artistry or your creativity and go like, maybe this isn't what I'm working, or maybe I shouldn't put all my eggs in this basket. Maybe I should either make another plan or make some alternate, you know, escape paths that I can take. And so I was feeling really anxious, you know, and got this audition for Jagged Little Pill for the out of town tryout, you know, where they were going to like work on the show. And I had known that the show was kicking around and my agents hadn't been able to get me an audition. Cause I was with like a sort of mid lowish range agent. And you know, when you have an agent, they submit you for things so you can get appointments, but that doesn't always mean that the casting department is going to want to see you, you know? And I think for a long time, people still saw me as like the hard to put in a box type that I was when I graduated at 22. It took me a long time.
Wow.
To like change, I think, the minds of some of the casting people, which is obviously very frustrating, especially because, of course, once I like lost weight and grew my hair out, then all of a sudden, oh, hey, we'd love to see you. And it's really bullshit.
Wow. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So, but I got the audition and I had just actually done a concert with Elia. So Elia and I were friends for a couple years and had always talked about like kind of growing our music together. And we started playing shows together and, you know, singing harmonies for each other. And he did this really cool show where he had a lot of people kind of guesting and joining and singing. And one of them was Lauren Patton, who I knew was already attached to this Jagged Little Pill show. So when I had the audition, I was able to like text him like, hey, can you put me in touch with that Lauren friend of yours? I want to pick her brain about like what the script is and like what's going on in the story. Like I could tell it was not about Alanis Morissette, but I was like, beyond that, I'm a little confused. What is going on? And Lauren was so great and jumped on the phone with me and gave me all this info so that I felt really prepared going into the audition.
I had to sing this
like really high floaty thing. And then also do this crazy choreography that Ebony Williams taught. And she's so beautiful and amazing. She's one of the two dancers behind Beyonce in the Single Ladies video.
Oh, wow.
So she's literally an icon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it was, I don't want to say I love auditions, but like, I love the experience of like the energy that happens when you're in an audition room. And it's like, you know, how prepared you are obviously is important, but then also it's like about being present and about allowing whatever comes up in that moment to come out so that you can actually tell your story to whoever's in the room in a truthful way. And I feel grateful that I don't know how or when I learned this or decided to make this my like mantra, but I feel like if you are in an audition, as long as you're being present and like your objective is to learn from the experience of being in that audition and not to book that job, then you'll generally walk out feeling pretty good, you know? Cause you're like, oh wow, I really showed them myself. I was really present, or like, oh, I discovered this one thing and that was fun. And I definitely felt very present in that whole audition process and very like in it and connected. And it was great to work with Diane Paulus. And again, this was another thing. At first, the casting agent didn't want to see me because I was actually my voice teacher at the time. I was in a voice lesson. I was like, I don't feel like there's anything that I can't get in for anything, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm feeling so antsy and frustrated. And he knew the music director for Jagged and sent him a text and said, I think you should see my student, Jane. The music director told casting, and casting said, oh, we don't want to see Jane. No, no. Jane's too clean cut. Jane's not right. Jane's not right.
Wow. Is that just like a punch to the gut? Just like the total honesty? Like, oh no, Jane. Oh, hell no.
Like, yeah, I was, I mean, I don't know. I obviously was in the room. I don't know exactly what he said, but I was just like, no, see me. And so then when I did I think Diane Paulus was kind of like, oh, yes, where have you been? You know, and
wow.
And she had also directed Waitress, the Sarah Bareilles musical, okay. which I also could never get an audition for. I never even got to audition for it.
Were you just not clean cut enough? I mean, what is this line that you have to toe?
Who knows? This business is bananas, you know?
It really is. So you get your foot in the door and then you book the gig, right?
I booked the gig. And, you know, they always say as soon as you plan a great vacation, you're sure to book a job. And I was going to go to France with my aunt and I had to call her and be like, I'm sorry, I can't go to France.
Best reason to not go to France, I'd say, is probably being on Broadway.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was a long journey. We did the out-of-town tryout in 2018. Mm-hmm. And we all thought, like, great, you know, and then we're going to know what theater we're going to. And they were like, we have to wait a while. Like, there's not a theater open. So we waited and we waited. And then we did another, like, workshop, like, kind of rehearsal session for it in December into January of then 2019. And again, that time we were like, great, we're going to find out what theater we're going to. We're going to like get the scoop. And at the end of that process, they were like, we're still waiting. And we were like, oh, okay.
And at this time, are you just like booking other gigs? Are you working a side hustle? Like, how do you ride this waiting?
It was wild. I mean, the whole experience in Cambridge was really wild for me. The night before I left, or two nights before, I played a show with Elia at Bowery Electric. And Elia was actually really sick. And I remember like really wanting to take care of, like, we had such a great relationship. We were good friends, but we had such a wonderful, just like supportive professional relationship. And I like really treated each other so well every time we worked together. And I remember being so worried about him. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, my boyfriend at the time was at that show and was being such an asshole. And he just didn't know how to be supportive of my acting career, I think, because he wish that he had one. And I had told him like right before I left to go to Cambridge that there was a moment in the show where I had like a silly kiss with this other guy in the cast because we were playing like high school kids who like just like make out in the hallway, you know. And he was like, wait, you kiss someone? And I was like, well, yeah, but it's like for a laugh. And also like John is gay, you know, like I'm kissing a gay man. And we are acting. Yeah. And he just like kind of threw a fit about it. And, and so like, as soon as I got to Cambridge, I was really upset. Obviously, you know, we lived together, we were really committed. And I was like, we're taking a break. Like, I'm not going to have this opportunity, the biggest opportunity I've ever had. Mm-hmm. And you can't support me or be supportive because I didn't tell you about a kiss that's with a gay man for laughs in a musical where I am acting.
I understand why he didn't end up being an actor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weird.
So we broke up and he moved all my stuff out of our shared apartment that we lived in for like 2 years into a storage unit. And I wrote a lot of songs. Basically all the songs that are on my album that's coming out were written at that time. I was immersed in Alanis and like all this anger and all of this like honesty in how she writes and in her lyrics and everything. And so it was a wild time. So after that, I didn't have a house. And I had a great storage unit that was packed to the brim, you know, and it was a wild time. I went to Europe with my sister. I went to Mexico with one of my best friends. I just like did everything. I came back to the city and showed all these songs to Elia and he was like, you should record these. And so I went to the studio and we recorded the whole album in like 4 days. And
this is your album coming out this February, correct?
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. That's so exciting. So this is the time that it was made. So is this 2019 now that you're talking about or 2020? What is the time period?
This is still 2018. It would have been fall of 2018.
And then what studio did you go to?
We went to a little place in Red Hook called Wonder Park.
Okay.
And the engineers that we worked with, Chris Krasnow and Eva, I'm spacing on her name. Cause I just spaced on her name, but I'm going to look it up and send it to you, but they're amazing. Okay. And they're both really great, musicians. And Elia had worked with them on his EP called New Folk Songs that he released and that I sang harmonies for. And so he was like, they're super awesome to work with. Like, they can engineer and then also pop in and like lay down drums and bass and guitar, you know, whatever
else. And you tracked need. This in 4 days.
Yep. Yep.
Wow. And then where, okay, what was the process after that then?
Oh, well, clearly a lot of self-doubt because it took me 4 years to release it. Yeah, lots of that.
Well, I do sort of want to ask a little bit about just sort of the background. You know, so you're an actor, you're a singer, you're on Broadway, you're doing shows. And, you know, writing kind of a folk Americana album on the side, I'd imagine is not what most people are doing who are on Broadway. Is that correct?
You know, I think there are a decent amount of people on Broadway who are actors who also have like music careers. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of them, and this is, you know, not like to be shady or judgy. You know, I think it's really hard when you're immersed in musical theater music and your voice is trained to sing musical theater, which is obviously yes. a lot of training and a certain sort of specific sound. I think that a lot of music that people end up releasing and writing who are in the theater industry, it's really hard to get it to go beyond the theater community or have it go beyond, like, you know, even me, I'm fighting against, you know, recommended artists with my name are like the Broadway cast recording of this. And I'm like, yeah. no.
Yeah. Sonically, that makes no sense with what you're releasing right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I, again, this is where I'm really grateful to Elia. He really helped me figure out like the sound of the album and was so great about even just giving me the confidence amid my own self-doubts of like sounding too theatery or sounding too mm-hmm. polished or sounding, which again was aided by the fact that I'd written some pretty like angry, gutsy songs in the midst of everything I'd been through and in the midst of being in Jagged. And mm-hmm.
So is that sort of yeah. what has propelled you to finally release this in February?
I went back and forth a lot on the mixes. And also I think, I mean, I was so grateful that I was able to do it all so quickly in a way that I could afford when mm-hmm. I was in between jobs, obviously. But I think because I've never played my songs with a band, it was really jarring to then hear some of them with all these parts. And then I got really critical of like, oh, did I make the wrong decision?
And
oh,
who did the arranging? Who did the arranging on the record?
It was Elia and then me and Chris, who was one of the engineers. We kind of all swooped it since it was just okay. the four of us. Mm-hmm. I technically like made every final decision, obviously. For but sure. then I just, which is I think why it was easier to then go back and question all of it, you know?
Absolutely.
If it had been someone else who was like, this is what we're doing and now we're done, I would have been like, thank you for your help. Like, I trust you.
That is essentially the relationship with my brother that I have. I'll be like, can you just arrange this? Yes, here's the arrangement. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, again, a learning curve. You know what I mean? Like, the next time I record, I am going in with a live band mm-hmm. and I want to do it all live to tape. And I want someone else who's really smart to tell everyone else what to do mm-hmm. and tell me when I'm done.
With everything you're saying right now, though, I do need to say that the singles that have been released are beautiful.
Just thank you.
Such great songs. So for anyone listening, don't listen to Jane on this at all.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the funny thing, right? Like, I have so much confidence in myself, or at least for a long time, I had so much. I'm battling with my confidence maybe more mm-hmm. recently in this. But as an actor, always so confident, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that is I felt like I had the tools. I knew the rules of what makes it good and what makes it not good, which again is mostly yeah. like bringing yourself to it and being
present.
It's also
really different, like when it's your name on the project, you know, it's yeah. one of the greatest yeah. things I think about being a part of a cast and a group is sort of like that group effort. And it's absolutely. Like, you make a little mistake, it's not that big of a deal. You know, you either all fail or you all win and it's great. Whereas yeah. when it's your name on the song, there's just a different sort of pressure, I feel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm so lucky. It was during the week when we were recording that Elia and I started to really not be able to ignore the feels we'd caught for each other. And
totally.
And I think it was like the day after we finished in the studio, I was showing him an Amy Mann song that I really loved for like mixing. I don't know. I don't even remember in what context, but we were at his apartment in Brooklyn and I was like, I have to tell you, I have feelings for you. And he was like, I have feelings too. And so we kind of talked like, okay, we really don't want to jeopardize our friendship and our working relationship. And we decided to go for it and just like go slow and, you know, really communicate. And mm-hmm. and yeah, now we've been
and
together
Elia's
for years.
Great. And Elia's so great. You guys are both so great. I mean, you were such a bright spot on that East Coast tour for me. And it's funny because, like, growing up, I think I always sort of assumed that New York was terrifying. And yet every time I play there, it's some of the nicest people and the warmest audiences. It's such a special place. I mean, I think it's a lot to do with the fact that the people there really love art and I think really get that it's hard to make art. And so you have this incredibly supportive community around you. But man, I just, it's an amazing place and you guys are definitely a part of making it so warm.
Thank you. Thank you. I really love living here. You know, now that I have Elia as like a person who, especially now that we're so, so close, I can, now he's my person who's like, no, this is good. Okay, now you're done. Okay, mm-hmm. we're doing this. Okay, here, you need to send these emails today. Like, you can do it. You're good. You got this. All your music is valid and good and you deserve success and let's get it out there. And he recorded his album at the Bomb Shelter in Nashville during the pandemic in September of 2020. And that was an amazing experience to witness. Like, I think that was such a great opportunity for me to just like really be a part of a really wonderful record being made and like seeing the possibilities of what that can look like in a way that now I feel much more excited about a music career. Yeah. Like, I think a lot of those doubts that I had, now I'm like, all right, let's go, you know? And certainly releasing these singles and having some good press and like having some wonderful outlets write some nice things, like now I'm like, oh
yes,
yeah, okay, I can do this, hell yeah. You know, the imposter syndrome is, it's fading, you know?
Absolutely. And I'm so excited to hear this whole record. So this record comes out, is it February 11th? Is that right?
Yeah.
And then what does the rest of, I guess, 2022 look like for you, if you have any idea? I mean, I could not answer this question right now, but can you?
No, really, I cannot. I just got a waitressing job. I haven't had a waitressing job in a while. I've been fortunate that even when Jagged was between different things, I had other jobs. Like, I did a really wacky off-Broadway show before we opened on Broadway in kind of that stretch of time between things that was really fun. And I played, I think, like 22 different characters. And it was called The Other Josh Cohen. I was just totally different people. Like, I was just on and off stage switching wigs. You know, I played an old Jewish lady. And like, it just was insane, but so fun. So I was lucky that I had those things going on so that in the kind of lulls between different phases of Jagged, I had some projects. And then when we finally opened on Broadway, it was so exciting. It was so thrilling to sort of like finally have that experience. And then obviously the pandemic was like this weird, scary pause. And then we reopened. It was like, great, you know, and we kind of overcame a lot of adversity to reopen at all. And
yeah,
you know, we did a lot of hard work as a company that was necessary work that we had to do about some things. And I was so proud of everyone who put in that work. And, you know, it just felt like we kind of were always overcoming these huge hurdles. And then the Rona got us. So I feel like with the show, I'd been at a point where I was ready for the next chapter. Mm-hmm. But theoretically, if we had stayed open, I could have only gotten out of my contract before July, which is when it was a full year contract. But because of the pandemic, obviously it got split up. So it was like however many months before, and then I was going to have another however many months to finish out my contract, which would be till July. And theoretically, the only thing that could have gotten me out of that contract would have been to get another job in a Broadway level show, like a really high, could have been a Broadway tour or something, but something really high level, playing a bigger role than I was playing in Jagged. So I was in the ensemble and moving furniture. Thank God I knew how that goes.
Oh my gosh. If you hadn't have had that groundwork laid earlier, I mean.
Who knows? It was a very active ensemble. Like, we played different characters and, you know, we were dancing and singing and kind of doing everything. It was insane. It was so hard. And then I understudied two of the leads. So I only could have gotten out of my contract if it were for a bigger theater job.
Okay.
So at the time I was like, I think I'm ready for the next thing. I'm ready for the next thing, which would have been a bigger role in another show. Mm-hmm. And that was like exciting, but also kind of scary because it's still a pandemic and there's not a lot that's really happening. You know, I wasn't getting a lot of auditions for those things that would then get me out of the contract. So then it was like, wow, like, is my body going to even last till July? You know, I'm not really like a dancer, you know? And I had all these injuries and, you know, it's working 6 days a week in that capacity and then also having to do rehearsal for understudy stuff. It was, you know, I felt
that's grueling.
It's so grueling. And it pays really well. Like, Broadway does pay really well. But when you think about the time, you know, and how limiting it is to the rest of your life and the rest of your creative endeavors, you start to feel like maybe it's not paying quite enough, you know?
Yeah, totally.
For how much it really takes out of you. So I was feeling a lot of kind of conflicting feelings, but eager for the next chapter. But it's weird because I kind of thought, I'd imagined that that next chapter would be like leaping onto a new plateau, you know, just
totally
like soaring onto the next thing. And instead it feels a little bit like we all got pushed off a cliff.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, these last 2 years, I think, have just really been hard on all arts communities. And it's just, it just feels like nothing is going the way it was supposed to go. I don't know.
Exactly.
It's the worst feeling. And yet it's amazing that you have a record coming out. And I think that that's going to be such a great pivot, even if it feels sort of like we're all sort of being pushed off a balcony.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think too, like, being in Jagged and being with it for so long really solidified for me some of the things I really love about that industry and that art form, and also clarified for me some things that I had romanticized about, like, what it would be like to be on Broadway.
Yeah.
In a way that is important. And now I'm going to have better boundaries about, like, the kind of work I really want to do. And do I want to be on Broadway again? Absolutely. Do I hope that it's in something where I'm, like, originating a role and, like, developing from the ground? I love creating something. You know, obviously it's much more fun to create something and then do it than it is to, like, jump into something that someone else has created. Elia's writing some musicals as well. He's an amazing, amazing composer, as well as, like, an Americana country writer. And he's writing this sick, sick, sick Western. And, you know, I've been researching manifesting and affirmations. It doesn't come naturally to me to, I like to plot all the worst things instead of think about all the best things.
Me too.
But, I'm really good at it. I should write a book. Yeah, like something like that I would love to do. And obviously I'm in a weird situation now where I'm not yet looking to, like, make money from my music. I, you know, I still have to figure out how that even works, really.
Oh gosh, I'm excited for you though. I mean, I think, yeah, it's like, it's a crazy time, but I'm really excited for what this record will do, and everyone should check it out.
Thank you.
I think by the time this is released, it will definitely be out. So cool. Well, Jane, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Of course. I hope I didn't ramble too much. I've had so much fun talking with you, and you asked such great questions. And—
oh, thank you. Thanks for listening to today's episode with Jane Bruce. If you'd like to hear Jane's new album, My Bed, head on over to Spotify and give her a follow and have a listen. You can also go to www.janebrucemusic.com for all music-related news. By the way, I will be on tour this May and June with Avi Kaplan. You can check out my tour dates on my website, andreavonkampen.com, to see if I'm headed to a town near you. As always, like and subscribe to this podcast, leave us a comment, and have a great day.